and welcome to the Diabetic Show. My name's Mark Philwood. My A1C is 7.2. Thank you so much for asking.
He's a type 1. My name is Dobie Maxwell. I am a type 2. My A1C, I think, is a blood alcohol content of, I haven't had my measured yet. We're talking, this is the Diabetic Show. We're glad you are here, informing you, hopefully in an entertaining way, about the disease of diabetes.
And if not, then we, at least we have the facts that we can fall back on. It's a simple matter of we've been doing this for, a long time. Mm-hmm. A lot longer than we ever thought we would be doing.
I think it's 1 year in the calendar year. Isn't
past
it?
1 year now.
Okay.
We're light years past that 1 year. Mm-hmm. We're steaming toward 1.1 years.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, enough of the... Okay, anyway, let's...
Now, if you want to get a hold of us, we do have a website
You got to remind me of all this stuff. It's early still. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get us on the web, the international web, the huge thing, the diabeticshow.com.
If you're in Wisconsin, the George Web.
Or the Facebook. You just go Facebook, Diabetic Show, you'll see Dobie's picture and your day will feel much better. Or you can get to the email, either one of us. And here's the thing with email. And we do get some, which is nice. It doesn't have to say Dobie or Mark or how to spell our names. Literally anything you put before that little at symbol, thediabeticshow.com, it'll get to us magically somehow. And we'll parse it out. We even have a couple today. You know, we say this every show.
Coma at diabeticshow.com.
What did I say?
Coma. Would that work? You said anything before?
Actually, it would. Sadly, true. It would. Any word, any series of numbers or letters. I don't. I just read the stuff.
Gotcha. Read it. We got some questions this week. Do we not?
Yeah. We actually do, and we'll try to get to them with our very special guest, our perennially special guest from United Hospital System, Donna Swanson.
Donna keeps us in business because we can go off and get goofy, and then she says, "Okay, boys, we're going to tell it how it is now. Here's the facts. I'm running this show."
Yeah.
For the good of humanity, not for the money.
Aren't we all?
God knows we're here for the fun.
You know, Dobie, it was back in 1921 that the Canadian physician Banting and medical student Charlie Best, they're credited with discovering the hormone insulin, as we've discussed many times. They knew this treatment was urgently needed for everyone, mm-hmm. so they wanted to make it as easy for the public to access it. And what could be easier than to say profit is not their goal? They sold the patent of this insulin discovery to the University of Toronto, a dollar.
And that's a Canadian dollar. So it's about 68 cents.
In today's world.
Yeah.
The university then, of course, gave the pharmaceutical companies the right to manufacture the drug royalty-free. Mm-hmm. Huge, huge. In other words, go ahead, make it. Go ahead, sell it. Have fun.
Boy. Somebody reaped the benefits that did not do the work.
Well, last year, pharmaceutical companies sold about $24 billion, with a B, mm-hmm. worth of insulin. They're looking forward to 2020 when sales are estimated to be in the $50 billion range.
Now, have you seen this when you're driving around? You see diabetic test strips. We'll buy them. Have you seen that?
No, what?
Our producer, Troy, has seen them. And I see the sign. It looks like, I buy houses, those shysters that'll, I'll offer you $42 for your house and paint it up and blow the roaches out and sell it for $100. It's the same kind of sign that there. It has fly-by-night written all over it.
Well, wait, but they're buying your, what,
it says
used?
Diabetic test strips. Doesn't say used.
Well, I was going to say used, yeah. God, my first marriage, not much
reason
we'll
for that.
It says
we'll buy
that.
Them. And I've also seen needles.
Wait, back here. They'll buy...
You haven't seen this.
So you're telling me, see, if one dies, somebody with diabetes dies, they'll buy their strips.
I don't know. It says diabetic test strips, we'll buy them.
Wow.
Yeah.
We should get them on the show.
It's
call it.
But I mean, how would you? I don't need any.
We all need it.
What, am I going to trade something? Okay, I got a wooden leg and a glass eye. I'll trade you for some diabetic test strips and a toupee.
Let's jump ahead at least.
Let's
4
jump ahead.
Into the
I'm
show.
Sorry, this is the time when we talk about diabetes in the news, and that was in the news.
Okay, well, there's a big class action lawsuit going on against the big three insulin makers. That, of course, would be our friends Eli Lilly, Novo Nordisk, and is it Sanofi? Yeah, close enough. This is the potential.
So there's competition going on, but amongst insulin makers.
There are three, what they call the big three of pharmaceuticals. And the 29 million people living with type 1 diabetes, that would be me, with the they refer to it as analog insulin.
Is this worldwide or nationwide?
Boy, that's
I'm not trying
question.
To be a jerk, but I'm saying there's 350 million Americans. So if it's 29 million, that's almost, you know.
Substantial.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see what kind of money, you know, comes
across
comes my
Russia.
Way.
I mean, there's they drink a lot of vodka. There's sugar in that. Maybe they can.
You know,
I don't know.
Is there sugar in vodka? We'll have to forget it.
Sure, they ferment it.
Potatoes.
Like you don't have a still in your bathtub, buddy. You're the one I suspect the most.
Those three pharmaceutical giants have been accused of unfairly raising their prices, thus monopolizing the insulin market by the plaintiffs in the case. And the plaintiffs is me. And well, the other 28,999,999. That's the deal. They're trying to get over $260 billion in settlements. They're going to bet. Attorney
firm. So you'll get a check?
I should have read this before. I apologize. Hagen Berman is the
That's your attorney?
Well.
You're in trouble, buddy.
They haven't called me
One
yet.
One call, that's all.
Well, anyway, as I'm sure you caught the news, Senator Bernie Sanders, Representative Eli Cummings, asked the Department of Justice and FTC to look into what they say the three companies for possible price collusion. Now, we here use the word possible price collusion to, you know, cut off any lawsuits against this
show. Like the mafia, he's got possible corruption charges.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the situation. They've got this all going on with them. Apparently, here's what the plaintiffs say. All these makers of these insulins, and include Lantus, Levemir, Novolog, Humalog, the prices on these drugs have increased more than 160% in the last 5 years, while the prices offered to pharmacy benefit managers stayed constant or even decreased in that same time. And as if you do or do not know, pharmacy benefit managers, I've never met one in face-to-face, but these have to be pretty cold, hard people.
Yeah.
They're very not really fun people because they've got a tough job. I mean, literally, they're pricing things or they're negotiating prices. They're kind of like the middlemen between those insulin makers and those insulin buyers.
Now, is this government regulated at all?
Not a bit.
Well, I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah, either way. So that's the deal. The gist is the pharmacy benefit managers are making money, according to the lawsuit. Not us.
Mm-hmm.
According to this lawsuit. And apparently huge differences between the list price and the prices is the pharmacy benefit managers. It's enormous. It's money. Huge money being whatever they do with huge sums of money. Now
they put up little signs and they say, well, buy your test strips. That's the whole people behind it. $24 billion with a B. They get it for, you know, $5 and they turn around and sell it for $1,000.
Let me get back to this.
Next thing you know, they've got
filed complaint.
Beach home in Miami.
Plaintiffs describe going into debt, taking out loans, moving back in with their parents, even quitting school to pay for their insulin. One plaintiff states she often turns out the lights and lowers the heat in her house, attempting to keep her electric bill as low as possible so she can afford her insulin.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that, you get the stress of the financial burdens, all consuming. Many plaintiffs describe a constant state of anxiety, kind of like the listeners of this show.
Right.
So, yeah.
Both of them in the same
house. Yeah, exactly,
in
the same house. Yeah. But anyway, here's the part that gets me, Dobby. I don't know about you here. Okay. I personally have reached out to the big three.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't got back to me yet.
Wait by your phone. You're turning a nice shade of purple, holding your breath.
There are they do have spokespeople out there. I called this from the internet. Spokesman for Lilly said, Lilly disagrees with the allegations reported to be in the lawsuit.
Of course they do.
They conduct business in a manner that ensures compliance with all applicable laws, and they adhere to the highest ethical standards.
Oh, yeah.
They do not have any other comment.
Mm-hmm.
A spokesman for Novo Nordisk said they are aware of the complaint, and with its characterization of the pharmaceutical supply chain, they disagree strongly with the allegations made against the company and are prepared to vigorously defend the company in this matter.
So how does it leave the little people like you and me?
Let me get to the Sanofi spokesperson.
Mm-hmm.
We do not comment on pending litigation.
Okay.
However, we believe strongly these allegations have no merit and will defend our intellectual property.
Now, what about the Charlie up there in Canada who sold it for, what about that whole thing, sold it for a buck?
You know why would we like to interview the best ancestor, the survivors of the best family, or the Banting family?
Okay.
Because you figure what they got, 50 cents a pop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with interest, you know, 25, 30 years.
This is where we are. We could talk about this for 3 years. They're doing it in the Senate, or they're trying to do it in the Senate with these new health care plans. And the thing gets me, Dobie, is you got the fingers pointing at each other. No, it's your fault. No, it's your fault. No. Nobody ever looks, or at least in my ears, they'll talk about everything but who makes the price on something. I've never heard that argument yet, except now. Whereas, what do they talk about the health care? We can't afford the health care because the Band-Aid costs $47. Why does the Band-Aid cost $47?
Well, I don't know, but I don't want to turn it into a political show. I think whatever side you're on, every right. human being needs health care, period.
Yes.
Both sides, anybody, they should have had it 100 years ago. They didn't. I'm ashamed of my country. I'm no longer pledging my allegiance to the flag.
All right.
Indivisible with liberty and justice for everybody but us.
I'm going to go.
It's a conspiracy, Mark.
I'm grabbing some sugar
I'm
here.
I'm putting my tinfoil hat on right now. I think I'm a little low on sugar. When Donna gets out here, she will tell us the truth.
That is true. The Diabetic Show will be right back. The Diabetic Show, Mark Philwick, Type 1.
Dobie Maxwell, Type 2. We are back. We appreciate you listening to us when we were on the air. It's, I think, the fourth Saturday of every week, bicentennially.
No, fourth Saturday of every month.
I meant that. I was joking when I said that.
Were you?
Yes, I couldn't tell. I do that once in a while.
I'm
a stand-up comic by trade, so if you'd like to come out and see a show, I do this for a living, so I'm not just some nut that sits here and
Well, you could be a nut, but
it's a chocolate-covered nut. There's some sweetness to the nut.
Will you stop? You're more nougat than anything. Okay, we're going to be speaking about losing weight, being a diabetic,
yes.
with Donna from UHS. Got to hit one more piece of news. We kind of got off on a little tangent there in the last little bit. A new study. Diabetes is now the third leading cause of death in the U.S. So you got that to take to the bank.
All right.
Yeah. It used to be number 7. But now there are different ways.
Zooming up the charts.
Yes.
Look out, cancer. We're coming after you.
That's another show.
Heart disease. Come on.
Well, that's what you got.
We're number one. I want to drink some Aunt Jemima syrup, just a whole bottle.
I've lost my place in this story.
I know, I did.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm
trying to make light of it without making fun of it. There is a difference.
Researchers that wrote in their study abstract that the number of deaths in which diabetes was named to be the underlying cause of death severely understated the contribution of diabetes to the mortality in the U.S. Researchers wrote the prevalence of diabetes has been going up throughout the world at an accelerated pace. Things like the heart disease, renal disease, visual impairment, peripheral artery disease. These are hard words, though, if you don't look at me like that. Peripheral neuropathy, cognitive impairment contributes to a very heavy burden, which is not always closely identified with diabetes.
That's the root cause, though.
But, you know, it's sort of like I've been diabetic now, 30 years? And if I die of the heart attack tomorrow, do I die of the heart attack? Is the heart attack my cause of death?
What about the sniper shot from the back of the room?
That's after. And that's, it's always, you know.
The bullet is sugar-free.
They did note, however, the frequency of listing diabetes as the underlying cause of death isn't a good way to know the actual contribution of the disease. I hate when they use the word contribution of something that's killing you, but that's what they're talking about. Bottom line is, as it stands now, diabetes is officially the 7th leading cause of death in the U.S. But if you throw everything into it, now it's number 3.
So it's a major issue, and that's why we are here, hopefully to help people do things about it, like we're talking about losing weight, calorie intake down, less sugar. It's a lifestyle. It's an effort, and that's why it's so difficult.
Well, as a diabetic that deals with medical conditions, my biggest problem is the companies that help me pay for my living. You know, those companies, they have no problem covering the heart attack, the stroke, or at least 80% of it. Let's not go nuts here.
Sure.
But when it comes to my test strips,
yes,
there's a problem.
So you have to buy those.
Yeah, they're. I can't say.
I know
yes,
a guy.
I have to. But yes, I know a guy. And yeah, bottom line is they make it very difficult, in my view, to be a healthy diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
The things they'll pay for, well, as much as it would be nice for them to pay for my heart attack, I would prefer not to have the heart attack altogether.
Well, how can we do that?
Well, I'm planning on losing some weight, mister.
All right.
As I said in the beginning of the show, I'm down to 7.2 for my A1C. And to give you the idea of what the A1C is, there's many different ways, I guess, to determine whether you are a healthy diabetic or healthier diabetic. They use A1C a lot of places. It seems to be the gold standard, at least. Let's bring Donna in. Donna Swanson from the United Hospital System. Donna, first off, thanks for dealing with us. And secondly, the A1C, the way I understand the A1C is it's the life of a red blood cell and the sugar that sticks to it.
Yes, that is correct.
Really?
Thanks for having me, by the way.
That's okay.
You're always welcome. You save our soul every week.
Yeah, yes, you do.
Our show.
Too kind. The A1C is measuring how much sugar is attached to the hemoglobin molecule on the red blood cell. And since the red blood cell lives about 3 months, we know it's a pretty decent 3-month average of how well that person has been controlling their blood glucose. However, I'd like to point out that the shortcoming of the A1C is that it's giving an average. So if you think of it like a bowling average, that's about right. It's not showing us what happens day to day. So it's really good to look at both together. We want to see what's happening day to day, because that's where we can have the greatest impact and make and modify to correct elevations.
Well, we've discussed this in the past, and you bring up a good point. It's an average. And if one day I'm shooting in the 300s and the next day I'm shooting in the 40s, it comes out my overall average over those 2 days are 150s, which was not great, but it's heck of a lot better than the 200 and so. So my A1C would reflect, okay, he's not doing too bad, but in reality, I'm all over the place.
Right. And most endocrinologists, and that's physicians that specialize in diabetes and all things endocrine, hormones and whatnot, they would prefer a patient to have a more stable day-to-day consistent blood sugar than have huge fluctuations of hyper and hypoglycemia. Excuse me, because hypoglycemia can cause damage, and hyperglycemia can cause damage.
Well, I got to stop you. Hyper, I understand the damage, you know, the high blood. I almost equate it to having sand in your bloodstream where artery walls start getting damaged and all the ensuing problems with the circulation. What happens to your body on a hypo or a low blood sugar? How does that destroy the body?
Well, the brain cells, excuse me, can be affected. And brain cells need insulin and glucose. And over time, research has shown that people that suffer too many hypoglycemic events can suffer dementia and memory loss and that sort of thing.
Oh, really? So yeah. It goes that far in?
Yep.
All right. So the bottom line is, at least for me, I look at a day as 24 hours in front of me, or 18 hours, or however many hours are going to be up that day. I know I'm going to be shooting up. Well, for me, I shoot up 4 times a day. I do the long acting, and for me it's 2 jl. I do that for my 24-hour coverage. And then before each meal, I shoot up a certain amount of Humalog. And what I like about the way things are today as a diabetic, as opposed to what they were, is the way they were is I had to eat to my insulin requirements. Whereas today, it seems I'm being taught that I can eat what I should eat, but then it's the other way around. I'm not eating to meet my insulin. I'm shooting my insulin to meet my needs.
Right. Okay. That is a great point. Nowadays, we want to really focus on figuring out what a patient's needs are, and then we want to match the insulin to what their lifestyle is, what their dietary intake is, and we want to match it that way. It's a much better setup that way.
All right. Let's take the break here, because on the backside, we want to talk about losing weight.
Yes.
While you're diabetic, especially for that guy over there, the type 2.
Mm-hmm. It's hard.
They
don't make whole wheat ding-dongs, Mark.
Yet.
You gotta shake your booty. Move it.
The Diabetic Show. We'll be right back. Again, welcome back. Diabetic Show. Mark Philwett.
Toby Maxwell. And you. We're glad you're here.
Absolutely. And at the break with our friend Donna Swanson from the United Hospital System, we are talking now about losing weight as a diabetic. For me, it's practically impossible. Not impossible. I tell myself that because, yeah, I haven't seen my feet since the Carter administration. But bottom line is, you have a type 2 over there.
Yes.
Pointing now at you, Dobie.
Pointing out the window, yes.
Yeah. You're actually not that bad. I mean, you can lose a couple. I'll be honest with you. I love you. A couple. But overall, there are worse.
Yeah, and it's my own fault because I was really great for like 2 years, and then I said, well, a little bit here, a little bit there. It's easy to get off the wagon. I'm sure your patients do that all the time, and it's my own fault, and I'll be the first one to take the blame.
When you were first diagnosed,
yeah,
and I was there with you.
Oh, it was great. Oh, you'd have been proud. My doctor said, I didn't think you could do it. Hey, thanks, doc. Thank you for the faith in me. And he said, well, most people don't. It's nothing personal against you. And then I got cocky, went to my head, and next thing I know,
I remember the first breakfast together, you ordered fruit.
Yeah.
Fruit. Mm-hmm. And before this, folks, he used to use that to throw at people, but he actually ate it.
Shredded Kleenex. That's what I ate for 6 months.
Oh, but the hardest part, well, I think Donna's leaving. Don't leave, Donna. The hardest part, though, like you bring up, Dobie, it's consistency.
Yeah.
You're deciding you're going to do it, and then you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now it's your turn, Donna. How do we do it?
How do we do it?
Well, I'd like to say first off, that metabolism is what it is, okay? And Dobie, your situation that Mark so eloquently just explained is very, very common amongst all patients with diabetes, not
sure.
just type 1 or type 2, but predominantly in type 2, I would say. But type 1s have that same challenge as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the challenges tend to be a little bit different depending on where they are in the stage of the disease. So everybody's an individual. For example, what I mean is, with type 1, one of the big challenges is we have to balance activity with our insulin needs. And we often find ourselves eating more calories trying to correct lows when we don't want to consume extra calories to correct lows.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that is very helpful, whether you're type 1 or type 2, is consistency with your meals. And one of the reasons with type 2 that we see a lot of people do wonderful in the beginning and then it sort of teeters off is because the way that they lost the weight may not have been something they could sustain long term. So for that reason, I'm not a big advocate of losing weight more than...
Better get that. Might be the phone.
Oh, that was our one caller we've ever had. Oh, well, better luck next time. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that that makes it challenging is that when patients... lose a lot of weight too rapidly in the beginning, it's not sustainable. And so, for example, if somebody's losing more than 2 pounds a week, can they maintain that? How are they losing it? Is it a diet or a meal plan that they can live with the rest of their life?
I was down to my birth weight there for a while.
Just
8 pounds, 5 ounces.
Yeah.
And when we look at, okay, how much, why does that work, right?
Mm-hmm.
With type 2, we know that, in type 1, it's very clear cut. Okay, within a year, they're not making insulin anymore. We have to figure out how many calories do they need, how much of it should come in carbohydrates. Okay, so they know, okay, I should eat 60 grams at breakfast, 60 at lunch, 60 at dinner, or whatever the case may be for that person.
Mm-hmm.
With type 2, we calculate the same. We want to do their height, weight, figure out how many calories do they need. And is their body weight greater than 120% of their ideal body weight? And it's going to be somewhat close to their body mass index, but that's a little bit broader range. But we're trying to determine is their caloric intake. Now, for somebody to be over 120% of their ideal body weight does not take much. Look at your BMI. If you're over on your BMI, your body mass index, you can stand to lose a few pounds.
Mm.
Unless you are, like, highly muscular or something, then we'd use some different formulas to try and calculate it. However, we'd be looking at energy expenditure and whatnot. So anyway, if the reason that people tend to lose a lot of weight is because it works in the beginning. they see an instant cause and effect relationship. Their blood sugar's 200, it's going to drop to, once it drops to 120, I drop 20 pounds. Oh, it's 120. But then gradually, just like before, we gain weight slowly, that resistance builds up, and it's we're right back to where we were before.
Exactly.
So that's why diabetes is reversible very early on in pre-diabetes and newly diagnosed type 2. The trick is maintaining it, keeping that level of motivation. But really, finding a meal plan, and that's what we teach, is we want to make sure that people understand how to eat healthy, be full when you eat. Mm-hmm. And when we load up on, it's really changing the mentality of the way you see food is a big part of it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people look at food and they think, I if I had a nickel for every time I heard somebody say I can't give up soda or juice or these foods, one can of soda has about on average 43 grams of carb. That's dinner for me.
Yeah. The whole.
Yeah. And now if you're, and that's one of the challenges with type 1. Well, if I have a low blood sugar of 40, I'm going to need 30 grams to bump up.
Yeah.
So it presents its challenges. So one of the keys with type 1 and type 2 is stay consistent with your diet. And if you're going to be exercising because you want to burn more calories, mm-hmm. you need to plan for that activity. Test your blood sugar ahead of time. Then take the appropriate amount of carbohydrate, healthy carbohydrate, to prevent going low. With a little protein might be helpful.
Okay, but wait. What about somebody like Dobie? Dobie is on the road a lot. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the benefits of the kitchen. Most of his exercise is
flushing the toilet. That's about the only physical activity.
I was going to say,
turning on the TV,
dodging things people are throwing at him on the stage, getting run out of town on a rail. Aside from these things, he's pretty sedentary.
It's going to require a few things. Okay, planning, discipline. Motivation.
I'm out.
Yeah. Time
no,
for a new
you're
guest
not.
Host.
You can do it. Yeah. No, seriously. Back in the day, I know I told both of you guys I used to be a flight attendant, and I saw pilots. And I mean, these people hold very busy schedules, maybe doing 10-hour, 12-hour days, whatever the case may be. And you're eating airport food, fast food, these sort of things. And we had a lot of people who are sedentary and would sit for 8 hours in that cockpit. And then we had pilots that I would see early in the morning on the treadmill.
Really?
That's it. I just went on a family vacation to a wedding in Coronado back in September. My brother-in-law has type 2 diabetes, and he has been through our program. And I was so excited because I was getting ready to go walk down to the beach in the morning. And sure enough, now I wasn't his educator, but I saw him get up every morning and go for a walk. He went to the health club's fitness center. I walked down to the beach and happened to see him on my way, and I thought, wow, this works.
See?
And he has excellent control of his blood sugar. But even people with very hectic, busy lifestyles, it's a matter of planning, figuring out where can I fit it in. If you can't get a half hour, can I break it into two 15-minute sessions? And if you can't do what you'd like to do, most people can swing walking.
How about 31-minute sessions? Would that work?
31 is awesome.
He's pushing.
I love it. I love it.
It's just the problem is, well, for me, maybe for Dobie over there, how do you get past the boredom of it, the repetition of it, the day-to-day-to-day?
It's a matter, again, perception. What is our body meant to do? Is our body meant to be sedentary? Is it meant to – think of somebody who think 100 years ago, what did our ancestors do? People were very active. Nobody had these desk jobs that we have today.
Very true.
People were out farming. They worked really hard jobs.
Every day was a different job.
Yes. And now we have a huge population of people who are much more sedentary, but that's become the norm. That's why we look at it as a challenge. It's a matter of perception. Same thing with food. When processed foods became available, we got all these options. As a result, our genes are changing. We're becoming resistant. Our cells are becoming resistant. That's why everybody's at risk for type 2 diabetes. Everybody, because our genes are changing.
We rarely talk about the numbers of type 2 diabetes, but I know we're rolling out of time here.
Go change your genes.
Yeah, it's just bad. Runaway. In the last, 10 years, we have almost doubled the type 2s. It's just running away. And it seems like the number of obese people that I see on a regular basis, a lot more than I used to.
Well, that's because we're in Wisconsin. We got high rates here. But
when you measure your fanny and axe handles, time to have the diet soda.
Oh, sap.
But really, you know, we're seeing more increased numbers of patients who have no family history and don't fit that classic mold.
And they're coming through with it.
Yes, and I sort of get a little disappointed if somebody can't lose weight. I know that's a, I mean, I don't want to see people overweight, obviously, everybody, myself included. But if somebody is 130% of their ideal body weight, I know, hey, we got 10% to work with. That's another avenue that we can work on decreasing resistance. So I know that's going to help that person. When somebody comes in and they're stick thin already, we have to maintain weight. Now we're looking at medication and diet. Those are our two avenues to explore there. So it's a matter, a lot of cases, we can reverse diabetes if they can lose a little bit of weight. So if somebody can, that's a huge motivator right there. It's a natural way to bring it down without...
I see it on your face, though.
No, my grandpa had a joke when I was a kid. He said, do you know how to lose 20 pounds of ugly fat? Cut off your head.
And with that, we want to thank everyone so much for listening to our show. Again, Troy McDonald, if it wasn't for you, you know, what's the point of doing this? And we want to thank our listeners. And, of course, Donna from United Hospital System.
TheDiabeticShow.com. Talk to us
next time.